right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, December 13th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everyone. It is an icy 15 degrees with blowing snow with a wind chill of minus 9 here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off? Yesterday, we titled the show DARPA, Gene Drives, Bill Gates, UN, CRISPR, Chimeras, and Facebook Psych. We looked at a lot of different things. We found that there was a release of FOIA files called the Gene Drive files that looked at DARPA as being the largest contributor to Gene Drive funding technology. And then Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation were caught with their hands in the cookie jar hiring a PR firm to try to manipulate the UN's decision on whether or not to allow gene drives or to consider them a WMD. We also looked at CRISPR being a part of gene drives. CRISPR is the technology behind them. And CRISPR, they have now found a way to CRISPR genes to flip switches without actually cutting DNA. And remember, that was the big drawback to CRISPR, is that they had all these off targets that they hadn't intended. But if you just imagine some of the stuff that we have going on here, we have looked across the spectrum, no pun intended, at all the different ways that they are able to use technology to flip biological switches that they are now using to, in one way or another, suck us into the machine. Of course, it's going to be a cure for cancer. We talked about that a very long time ago, how we'd postulated that would be the one way that maybe people would step right up. And I just saw a Pew Research study, some excerpts from it the other day, that it talked about that is the one thing in looking at the American public that people aren't so leery about with accepting technology as a daily part of their existence, as it's blending and merging with biology. So we had looked at a couple stories at the end of the show about Facebook executives. There's been a lot of this lately, of people who have been in the industry for a long time and are now seeing some of the effects that melding technology with our lives has created. And we did not get through the second executive yesterday, so I'm going to start there. We're going to spin it off in a couple different directions. All right, so anyway, this is out of Gizmodo. And there was a former Facebook executive, and that was Sean Parker, who Camille reminded me, I knew he had something to do with CRISPR, and he was involved in funding some sort of CRISPR cancer research. But the second executive, and I could not properly pronounce his name, he kept making me stumble, is now coming out saying that we are being programmed. So this is the year everyone, including founding executives, began publicly questioning the impact of social media on our lives. And I would even extend that further than social media, but social media just being one application of many. Last month, Facebook's first president, Sean Parker, opened up about his regrets over helping create social media as we know it today. And now Klamath Pillipia, former vice president of user growth, also recently expressed his concerns. During a recent public discussion at the Stanford Graduate School of Business, Pillipia, who worked at Facebook from 2005 to 2011, told the audience, quote, I think we have created tools that are ripping apart the fabric of how society works. Some of his comments seemed to echo Parker's concern, and Parker said that the social media creates, quote, a social validation feedback loop by giving people a little dopamine hit every once in a while to get them to chase that dangling carrot because someone liked or commented on a photo or a post or whatever. So just days after Parker made those comments, Pillipia told the Stanford audience, the short-term dopamine-driven feedback loops we've created are destroying how society works because it's addicting them all to the machine. No civil discourse, no cooperation, misinformation and mistruth. And it's not an American problem. This is not about Russian ads. This is a global problem. There's no fake news involved here. We're going to talk a little bit about some of this new AI fakery that they're messing with that's going to make you question what's real and what is not. I have that story queued up a couple in the future here. So let's finish this. It's as if Parker and Pilipia got together at a bar that week to work out their inner demons. And when the host asked Pilipia if he was doing any soul searching in regards to his role in building Facebook, he responded, quote, "I feel tremendous guilt. I think we all knew in the back of our minds, even though we feign this whole line of, like, there probably aren't any unintended consequences. If I think deep, deep, deep back to the recesses, we kind of knew something bad could happen. But I think the way we defined it was not like this." When we read this story yesterday, I'd actually pointed out that seems to be a lot of what has been echoing through many people's minds who have come back through the day and work their way through helping to build this machine. Everything that is happening right now, we're going to end the show up looking at a whole spate of technologies that are coming. Everything that is happening right now all came from that happened before. And many of us who were sucked into being part of the technology infrastructure that helped construct what we have today are now saying, wait a second, this is not what we had planned. Remember, I told you it was like the rebels in Star Wars. Back in the day, there was no education to get into computer science. A computer science degree when I was in college was called electrical engineering. Okay? Those were the people who became computer scientists. There was no CS degree where you learned applications. That was part of the electrical engineering program. So anyway, he went on to continue what, quote unquote, this is, because it wasn't defined like this. And it says, "So we are in a really bad state of affairs right now. In my opinion, it is eroding the core foundation of how many people behave in between each other. And I don't have a good solution. My solution is that I just don't use these tools anymore. I haven't for years." Speaking more broadly on the subject of social media, Pilipia said that he does not use social media because he, quote, innately didn't want to get programmed. And as for his kids, quote, "They are not allowed to use this shit." That's where I got cut off. Then he got even more fired up. Quote, "Your behaviors, you don't realize it, but you are being programmed. It was unintentional, but now you got to decide how much you are willing to give up, how much of your intellectual independence," he told students in the crowd. "And don't think, oh yeah, not me, I'm fucking genius, I'm at Stanford. You're probably the most likely to fucking fall for it." Wow, this is pretty amazing. He said this to the kids. "You are fucking checkboxing your whole goddamn life." So there you have it. That is a former executive from Facebook speaking to students at Stanford. So I don't know. There was another story, and this one came out of The Verge. This is about the same speech that he gave, and I don't know how much different this is. Well, we'll see here for a minute. His criticisms were not only aimed at Facebook, but the wider online ecosystem. "The short-term, dopamine-driven feedback loops we've created are destroying our society works," he says, referring to online interactions driven by hearts, likes, thumbs up. "And there is no civil discourse, no cooperation, misinformation, mistruth, and this is not an American problem. This is a global problem." And it is. This is enslaving humanity, guys. This is getting people sucked into the machine. And as we are interacting with the machine, they are taking all of those interactions and mapping them as behaviors. And that's where we're going to get into. We've spent some time looking at behavioral biology. That was a lecture from the Stanford professor, interestingly enough. A lot of these universities are spending lots of time and effort trying to reverse engineer the brain to create a better artificial intelligence, and that would include institutions such as DARPA as well. So a story came out of MIT Technology Review. This was pretty recent, October 12, 2017. "Inside the Moonshot Effort to Finally Figure Out the Brain. AI is only loosely modeled on the brain. So what if you wanted to do it right? you would need to do what has been impossible until now, and that is map what actually happens in neurons and nerve fibers. Here's the problem with artificial intelligence today, says David Cox. Yes, it has gotten astonishingly good, from near perfect facial recognition to driverless cars and world champion goat-playing machines. And it is true that some AI applications don't even have to be programmed anymore, and that would be like Google's Deep Brain or Deep Mind, which is teaching itself. They are based on architectures that allow them to learn from experience. Yet there is something clumsy and brute force about it, says Cox, a neuroscientist at Harvard. To build a dog detector, you need to show the program 1,000 things that are dogs and 1,000 things that aren't dogs. My daughter only has to see one dog. I think we did read this before. It's all right. It's a good lead in here. And as happily pointed out, puppies ever since, and the knowledge that today's AI does manage to extract from all that data can be oddly fragile. So it can pick up puppies. Oh, no, his daughter can pick up puppies. And some artful static to an image, noise that humans wouldn't even notice, and the computer might even mistake a dog for a dumpster, and that's not good if people are using facial recognition for, say, security on smartphones. Yeah. Oh, look, as I scroll down, there's a little mini brain in a freaking test tube. Oh, God. So to overcome such limitations, Cox and dozens of other neuroscientists and machine learning experts joined forces last year for the Machine Intelligence from Cortical Networks Initiative, and that is by DARPA, and it is acronymed MICRONS, which is a $100 million effort to reverse engineer the brain. It will be the neuroscience equivalent of a moonshot, says Jacob Volkelstein, who conceived and launched MICRONS when he was a program officer for the Intelligence Advanced Research Project Agency. So this is IARPA, not DARPA, which is the U.S. intelligence community's research arm, their equivalent of DARPA. He is now, so this is the project, the Apollo project they're working on with George Church to barcode neurons. He is now at the venture capitalist firm Camden Partners in Baltimore. And MICRONS researchers are attempting to chart the function and the structure of every detail in a small piece of a rodent cortex. It is a testament to the brain's complexity that a moonshot is needed to map even a tiny piece of this cortex, a cube measuring 1 millimeter on a slide and the size of a coarse grain of sand. But this cube is thousands of times bigger than any chunk of brain that anyone has tried to detail. And it will contain roughly 100,000 neurons and something like a billion synapses and junctions that allow nerve impulses to leap from one neuron to the next. It's an ambition that leaves other neuroscientists awestruck. And of course, guys, doing all of this is to figure out all the secrets so then they can start putting in little neural dust motes to connect all kinds of statistics and behavioral analyses and chemical and hormonal analytics from your person into a database to have full control, whether it be remotely controlling or manipulating you as a biological organism. They'll make you a cyborg. It's true. I think what they are doing here is heroic, says Eve Martyr, who has spent her entire career studying a much smaller neural circuit in Brandeis University. It's amongst the most exciting things happening in neuroscience, says Conrad Cording, who does computational modeling of the brain at the University of Pennsylvania. The ultimate payoff will be, listen to this, the neural secrets, ding, 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 mined from the project's data, principles that should form what Volkelstein calls the computational building blocks for the next generation of AI. And yes, that next generation of AI is what Ben Goetzel called artificial general intelligence. That's the stuff that Kurzweil talks about, where we're going to be able to connect our neocortex to this superhuman brain full of knowledge. It'll be running the globe. This is where they are heading us, to this socialist, share everything, democratized technocracy, where we will all be a part of the Internet of Everything. After all, he says, today's neural networks are based on decades-old architecture and some fairly simplistic notions of how the brain works. And essentially, these systems spread knowledge across thousands of densely interconnected nodes analogous to the brain's neurons. These systems improve their performance by adjusting strengths of their connections. But in most computer neural networks, the signals always cascade forward from one set of nodes to the next. The real brain is full of feedback. For every bundle of nerves conveying signals from one region to the next, there's an equal or greater number of fibers coming back the other way. But why? Are those feedback fibers the secret to one-shot learning and so many other aspects of the brain's immense power? Well, you would think about it. I mean, if you're doing real-time feedback, like you touch something hot, oh, Jenny, you just got burned. But you know what? That feedback's going to stick with you. You're not going to do it again and again. Until that, I don't know, if it was going one way, how would you even tell yourself it was hot? We'd have to bounce to the heat mode or something. But in most computer neural networks, they only go forward, but the brain is full of real feedback, and they send information back the other way. Is this something else going on? Mike Rahn should provide at least some answers, says Princeton University neuroscientist Sebastian Sung, who is playing a key role in this mapping effort. In fact, he says, I don't think we can answer these questions without a project like this. So don't feel guilty about it. Don't have any ethics, because this is necessary. The Microns team, one led by Cox, one based at Rice University and Baylor College of Medicine, and a third at Carnegie Mellon, which is where Obama did his AI is going to take us all over and change the face of a nation speech before he left, are each pursuing something that is remarkably comprehensive, a reconstruction of all the cells in a cubic millimeter of a rat's brain, plus a wiring diagram, which they call a connectome, showing how every cell is connected to every other cell, and data showing exactly which situations make neurons fire and influence other neurons. In a step, it is to look at the rat's brains and figure out what neurons in that cubic centimeter are actually doing. And when the animal is given a specific visual stimulus, such as a line oriented in a certain way, which neurons suddenly start firing off impulses and which of their neighbors respond? As recently as a decade ago, capturing this kind of data, was difficult to impossible. But this is long before things such as optogenetics and fluorescence and other types of implantation tools. The tools just never existed, Volgenstein said. And it's true that researchers could slide ultra-thin wires into the brain and get beautiful recordings of electrical activity of individual neurons, but they couldn't record for more than a few dozen at a time because the cells are so packed tightly together. Researchers could also map the overall geography of neural activity by putting humans and other animals into MRI machines, but researchers couldn't monitor individual neurons that way. The spatial resolution was about a millimeter at best. So what broke that impasse was the development of techniques for making neurons light up when they fire in a living brain. To do this, scientists typically seed the neurons with a fluorescent protein, ding ding, that glows in the presence of calcium ions. And those are those calcium gate switches that we've talked about, which surge in abundance whenever a cell fires. That's the on switch. The proteins can be inserted into a rodent's brain chemically, carried by a benign virus, and that would probably be something like the adenovirus, or even encoded into the neuron's genome. Hold on one second, guys. I might have an emergency. Sorry, guys, that was my dad, and he hasn't been feeling too well, so I was a little worried there for a second, but he forgot I was doing my show. All right, anyway, so the proteins can be inserted into a rodent's brain chemically, carried by a benign virus, which is probably the adenovirus, or even encoded into the neuron's genome. The fluorescence can then be triggered in several ways, perhaps the most useful by a pair of lasers, ding, ding, that's optogenetics, that pump infrared light into the rat through a window set into its skull. The infrared frequencies allow the photons to penetrate the comparatively opaque neural tissue without damaging anything before getting absorbed by the fluorescent proteins. The proteins, in turn, combine energy from two of the infrared photons and release it in a single visible light photon that can be seen under any ordinary microscope as the animal looks at something or performs any other numbers of actions. And we also found out they were remotely controlling mice in that way as well. I think they might have even if somehow had that connected to mind control by the controller that was manipulating these mice and making them turn right or left. So where do we go from here? I don't know, guys. So they're learning all about manipulating the brain. We also read about some of the stuff that DARPA was doing. The U.S. military, and remember, DARPA and IARPA are financing a lot of this research. So they can use it to control things such as your moods. The U.S. military and your behaviors is testing mood-altering AI-controlled brain implants in humans, and we should get excited. Currently, DARPA is funding two teams which are running preliminary trials of brain implants that can be used as specialized algorithms to detect patterns linked to mood disorders. These devices are able to deliver electrical impulses that can supposedly shock the brain back into a healthier state. And research about these closed-loop brain implants was presented at the Society for Neuroscience meeting in Washington, D.C. There are hopes that this technology could provide new ways to treat mental illness that goes beyond the capabilities currently available in therapy. The use of brain implants to deliver electrical pulses is referred to as deep brain stimulation, and it is already used to treat ailments like Parkinson's disease. However, while there has been some evidence to suggest that constant stimulation could help with chronic depression, one major study saw no improvement at all. And that's where they decided to give AI the ability to determine when your chemical equilibrium is getting out of whack in your brain. It'll give you a little electrical zap that you don't even feel, and it'll bring those back within parameters. This is kind of getting a little scary. And as this is all happening, guys, we have AI that is moving into every part of our lives, not only from outside of us, but inside of us as well. But it can also influence our external environment and make us question what is real and what is not. And these are some of the things where you got to look at the psychology that is happening and how they're making us question everything and really be confused over what we can believe and what we can't. And this is how they are faking people out to fall into the big black hole that is technology. This is the matrix that we are being captured inside of. It's like a big buckyball. I remember reading about buckyballs in the late 80s, early 90s, and I thought they were pretty cool, but buckyballs are very complicated. And they can put little cages around things such as radiation in zeolite. Zeolite has buckyballs inside of it that capture radioactive particles in a cage. Anyway, so here's the next thing. Artificial intelligence is making fake videos that may facilitate the end of quote-unquote reality as we know it. What are we going to trust, it asks. And this is out of sciencealert.com. And they were sharing this out of futurism.com. Anyone worried about the ability of AI to mimic reality is likely to be concerned by NVIDIA's latest offering. And that is an image translation AI that will certainly have you second-guessing anything you see online. So remember, you can't trust anything anymore. Not even those alternative media people like Joel. In October, NVIDIA demonstrated the ability of one of their AIs to generate disturbingly realistic images of completely fake people. What? And now that tech company has produced one that can generate fake videos. The AI does a surprisingly decent job changing day into night, winter into summer, and house cats into cheetahs, as well as vice versa. Best or worst of all, this AI does it with much less training than existing systems. Like NVIDIA's face-generating AI, I didn't know that they had one of those. This image translation AI makes use of a type of algorithm called a generative adversarial network. And we've read about those before. They pit against each other. In again, two neural networks work together. All right. The one I read, they were pitted against each other. By essentially working against each other, there we go, and one of the networks generates an image or video while the other critiques its work, and typically, a GAN requires a significant amount of labeled data to learn how to generate its own data. For example, a system would need to see pairs of images showing what a street looked like with and without snow in order to generate either image on its own, and however, this new image translation AI developed by NVIDIA researcher Ming-Yu Liu, Thomas Burrell, and Jan Katz can imagine what a snow-covered version of a street would look like without ever actually seeing it. Now, that's kind of frightening. And in this video, there's two side-by-side images, one during the winter and one during the summer, it looks like. And obviously, according to the story, one of those is fake. Liu told The Verge that the team's research is being shared with NVIDIA's product teams and customers, and while he said he couldn't comment on how quickly or to what extent the AI would be adapted, he did note that there are several interesting potential applications. For example, it rarely rains in California, but if we would like our self-driving cars to operate properly when it rains, he says, we can use our method to translate sunny California driving sequences into raining ones to train our self-driving cars. It's going to make it a virtual reality. And beyond such practical applications, the tech could have whimsical ones as well. Imagine being able to see how your future home might look in the middle of winter when shopping for houses, or what a potential outdoor wedding location would look like in the fall with the leaves blanketing the ground. Oh, yeah. All of these insignificant things that you're going to use to sell to the dumb American public. That said, such technology could also have nefarious uses as well. If widely adopted, our ability to trust any video image based solely on what our eyes tell us would be greatly diminished. Video evidence would become admissible in court, and fake news could become even more prevalent online as real videos become indistinguishable from those generated by AI. Of course, right now, capabilities of this AI are limited to just a few applications, and until it makes its way to the consumer level, we have no way of telling how it will impact society as a whole. For now, we can only hope that this potential of this technology incites discussion about AI and the proper regulation, because clearly the impact of AI is going to reach well beyond the job market. Ding-a-ling! And guys, AI is going to be invading our lives more than you ever know. This coming Internet of Things is going to connect every facet of our existence to the machine so it can monitor, bag, and tag your biometric functions to be able to tell whether or not, remember they always told us that this new 21st century healthcare push to be able to determine when you are getting sick before it actually happens, it's like gauges in a car. That's what they want to do. Put you on a dashboard and be able to monitor what is happening. Well, remember, one of the first places they're going to do that, because most people are still not willing to step up for their implants, there's a story that came out of nanowork.com, December 5th, 2017. In a first, 3D printed objects connect Wi-Fi without electronics. Thank you very much for reminding me about this one, Camille. Imagine a bottle of laundry detergent. It's going to make your laundry detergent part of the Internet of Things that can sense when you are running low on soap and maybe send you an email. I added that. And automatically connect to the Internet to place an order for more. University of Washington researchers are the first to make this reality by 3D printing plastic objects and sensors that can collect useful data and communicate with other Wi-Fi connected devices entirely on their own. With CAD models that the team is making available to the public, 3D printed enthusiasts will be able to create objects out of commercially available plastics that can wirelessly communicate with other smart devices, that can make battery-free sliders that control music volume, and a button that automatically orders more cornflakes from Amazon, or a water sensor that sends an alarm to your phone when it detects a leak. Our goal was to create something that comes out of your 3D printer at home and can send useful information to other devices, says the co-lead author and University of Washington Electrical Engineering doctoral student Vikram Iyer. But the big challenge is, how do you communicate wirelessly with Wi-Fi using only plastic? Well, that is something that no one has been able to do before. But you know what? I recognized this technology when I saw the diagram of it. This is a lot of what they were doing at MIT with being able to use wireless signals to determine the emotions of people in the room, as well as to see through walls. This is using backscatter data. In this backscatter system, an antenna is embedded in a 3D printed object, and it reflects the radio signals emitted by a Wi-Fi router, which is seated on the left in this photo, to encode information that is read by the Wi-Fi receiver in a phone, computer, or other device that is located in this picture to the right. The system is also described in a paper called 3D Printed Wireless Connected Objects. Ding, ding. That's going to be your Internet of Everything, enchanted objects with intelligence everywhere. Presented November 30th at the Association for Computing Machinery's SIGG Graph Conference and Exhibition on Computer Graphics and Interactive Techniques in Asia. That was a mouthful. And two 3D print objects that can communicate with commercial Wi-Fi receivers, the team employed backscatter techniques that allow devices to exchange information. In this case, the team replaced some functions normally performed by electrical components with mechanical motion activated by springs, gears, switches, and other parts that can be 3D printed, borrowing from principles that allow battery-free watches to keep time. Backscatter systems use an antenna to transmit data by reflecting radio signals emitted by a Wi-Fi router or other device, and information embedded in those reflected patterns can be decoded by a Wi-Fi receiver. In this case, the antenna is contained in a 3D printed object made of conductive printing filament that mixes plastic with copper. Just like a clock. So this is crazy. Information in the form of ones and zeros is then encoded by the presence or the absence of a tooth on a gear. Energy from a coiled spring drives that gear system, and the width of that pattern of the gear teeth control shows how long the backscatter switch makes contact with the antenna, creating patterns of a reflected signal that can be decoded by the Wi-Fi receiver. And honestly, guys, this is way deeper than what I want to get into how they are printing wireless into plastic objects. But where are you going to find 3D printed plastic objects and walls and floors and probably furniture at some point in the future is going to be in places such as these new futuristic smart cities that are starting to pop up all over the world. We looked at Neom, and that was the Saudi Arabian city, as well as Belmont. At the time, I didn't know the name, and that is Bill Gates' investment firm city in Arizona. Well, I want to look today, since we got about half the show left here, and I really didn't have a lot of research done for today, but it's because I've been working, and I've been really busy working on trying to get some writing done. I told you I have a co-author that approached me, so we've been working on a few collaborative efforts, the second of which was published today at techspot.com. It's actually one of the top stories on the front page, called The Last Mile to Civilization 2.0. Technologies from our not too distant future. And you know, when I was reading through this morning, I had to kind of chuckle to myself, because this technology that we were talking about sounded like it was right out of an episode of Before the First Cup, except this time in writing. So we're going to cover this for the rest of the show. Five futuristic technologies you might not know about. We should put in parentheses, unless you are a listener to Before the First Cup. Developments in big data and biotech are ushering in a new age of consumer electronics that'll bring civilization toward being a connected Internet of Things. As technology migrates from our desktops and laptops to our pockets and our bodies, databasing and deep learning will allow for society to be optimized from the micro to the macro. Here are five technologies that may not be on your radar today, but they are sure approaching closer and are expected to become very relevant very soon. Number one, smart voice analytics. And we've talked about these many times before. Siri, is there a doctor in the house? Smartphones and wearables could be equipped with software that is capable of diagnosing mental and physical health conditions spanning from depression to heart disease by listening for biomarkers through the sound of your voice. Researchers are developing new ways to use machine learning for analyzing tens of thousands of vocal characteristics, such as pitch, tone, rhythm, rate, and volume, to detect patterns associated with medical issues by comparing them against voice samples from healthy people. Founded in 2012 and backed with $10 million in funding over the last 4 years, Israeli-based Beyond Verbal. We covered these guys. They have cell phone applications with little colored smiley faces or unhappy faces to tell you about your emotions when talking to someone on the phone. Is chief among startups who created the voice analytic technologies that can track disease and emotional states. The company claims that its patented mood detector is based on 18 years of research about mechanisms of human intonations from more than 70,000 subjects across 30 languages. Beyond Verbal is developing an API to interface with and analyze data from voice-activated systems, like the ones you have in your smart homes, cars, digital assistants like Alexa and Siri, or any other IoT device. So think about that. Siri, order me some cornflakes. Oh, it appears to me, Jewel, that you sound a little bit depressed today. We'll have to get you your newest dose of Soma. And as a part of its outreach, the company is also doing research with the Mayo Clinic and has expressed interest in working with organizations such as the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative. We talked about them as well, trying to map every cell in the body, the Cell Atlas. Similarly, Sandi Health out of Boston, Mass. Also aims to have a voice analytics AI installed on devices and is seeking people, if anyone wants to step right up, to provide samples through its smartphone application. The company's platform can detect audible changes in the voice and is already being tested by hospitals and insurance companies to remotely monitor and diagnose mental and physical health in real time. Long term, the companies are looking at how historical patient records can be integrated in the age of AI and big data. In addition to privacy concerns, the ability for patients to fake vocal properties remains an obstacle that researchers are working to overcome. Now, remember, when we first read about this, I was kind of laughing that we're going to have to talk like this all the time. But now they're trying to overcome people like me. We're throwing wrenches into the machine. All right, so now the next technology, and this one would be smart contact lenses. Remember, I've always said, don't put it into your eye. You have that optic nerve that's a direct connect to the brain. Once they get into your brain, they can do pretty much anything. Blink once for a yes and twice for augmented vision. Researchers, including those at Google, Samsung, and Sony, are developing sensors and integrated circuits that are compact and biocompatible enough to be used in smart contact lenses, and it's thought that such devices could be used for a variety of mainstream applications, such as capturing photos, or videos, augmented reality, enabling enhancements like image stabilization and night vision, or even diagnosing and treating diseases. For it to be comfortable, the lens must be compact in diameter and thickness, which presents many design challenges, particularly when it comes to power delivery. Standard chemical-based batteries are too large and risky for use in contacts. So researchers are looking to near-field inductive coupling in the short term, while long-term solutions could involve capturing solar energy, converting tears into electricity, or using a piezoelectric device that generates energy from eye movement. Eye movements such as blinking could also be used to interact with the lens, and Sony has a patent describing the technology that can actually distinguish between voluntary and involuntary blinks. Although they are nascent, products in this category are already beginning to appear, including a compact heads-up display developed by Innovega. Called eMacula and formerly called iOptic, the prototype has been purchased by DARPA, wouldn't you know it, and combines contact lenses with a set of glasses that essentially serves as a projection screen. The contact lens is a special filter that enables the eye to focus on an image projected on the glasses while still being able to see the surrounding environment. In addition to military applications, if approved by the FDA, Innovega says the kit could be useful for gaming and 3D movies. All right, we got to find a way to sell it to the public. And elsewhere, the FDA has already approved a contact by SensiMed that can measure eye pressure in glaucoma patients Google has filed patents for contacts such as those that can track glucose levels, and researchers at UNIST are exploring the same subject, while the University of Wisconsin-Madison is also working on auto-focusing lenses that can replace bifocals or trifocals. Technology in this realm will largely depend on the availability of extremely compact and affordable biosensors. In addition to external lenses, a Canadian company, and there was a video to this, and I wish I could play it, but I can't, called Optometrics, is currently conducting clinical trials on an injectable and upgradable auto-focusing bionic lens that claims it could improve 20/20 vision by 3 times. This is going to make you superhuman. Step right up. Be one of the super friends. Future enhancements might include a slow drug delivery system, an augmented reality with an in-eye projection system that can wirelessly access device displays, and superhuman sight that can focus to a cellular level. In its latest press release from June of 2017, Ocumetrix states that clinical approval should follow in the next 2 years for Canada and the EU and 2 to 3 years for the US FDA. Speaking about the potential downsides of this technology during his presentation at the Superhuman Summit 2016, Ocumetrix founder Dr. Webb Garth posited that not having these new lenses might wind up being the biggest drawback, noting that the advantages the early adopters would have. So if you don't get them, Johnny, you're not going to be able to see 7,000 feet. You won't be able to see the fly on the bumper. All right, so now the next category, and this would be non-invasive brain-computer interfaces, or BCIs for short, seamless mind-machine interactivity with the digital world. Conceptualized more than a century ago and demonstrated in 1924 to be capable of measuring electrical activity in the human brain, the EEG, which is the electroencephalography, was heavily researched throughout the 1970s, courtesy of financing from the National Science Foundation and from DARPA, with some of the earliest brain-computer implants dating back to at least the 1990s. As brain research has accelerated in recent years, thanks to the Brain Initiative, EEG technology has gotten much cheaper and less intrusive. Today, companies including Facebook are seeking ways to package the technology as a novel consumer product. Although EEG was largely pioneered as a neuroprosthetic technology for impaired individuals, such as those who are paralyzed, non-invasive brain-computer interfaces can now translate activity from the brain speech center into text or some other interaction with a digital device. EEG interfaces typically consist of a headset, skull cap, or armband that convert activity into digital signals, and this allows the technology to read impulses from the nervous system and creates the opportunity for devices that could let you type with your mind, for example, not to mention potential for VR applications and other mediums that could benefit from a seamless brain-computer interface solution. Our old friend Regina Duggan, outgoing head of Facebook's Building 8, also formerly of Google and DARPA, said at the Facebook F8 Developer Conference in April 2017 that the company is developing a non-invasive sensor that can turn thoughts from the speech center of your brain into text on a computer at 100 words a minute. The endeavor has resulted in a partnership between Facebook and more than 60 researchers and engineers from institutions including Johns Hopkins University, the institution that has one of the world's biggest brain databases, as well as UC San Francisco, UC Berkeley, and Washington University. Other upcoming EEG-based technologies, one would be from a company named Neurable. They are working on a brain-controlled system for augmented and virtual reality applications that involves an EEG headset with electrodes alongside an application that analyzes brain activity and converts them into commands. The next company is Control-Labs. And we read an interview with these guys before. They use an armband to read electrical signals from the arm, which has motor neurons so complex that they are compared to speech, making them an ideal candidate for interfacing with computers and mobile devices. Number three company is Emotive, and we've read about these guys. They employ a 5 or 14-channel EEG headset for brain monitoring and cognitive assessment, which can be used for brain control technology, brain wellness assessments, brain research and education, as well as to reveal emotional reactions to products by consumers. Number four is NeuroSky, and we linked to each of those in the article. So if you're more interested in any of these technologies, you can go check that out. Utilizes a multi-layer approach to full VR immersion goggles and an EEG headset to provide you with, quote unquote, what they call telekinetic powers in the Matrix, such as the ability to throw a truck with your mind in their game called NeuroBoy. And then number five is OpenBCI. This is an open source DIY biohackers toolkit that is Arduino compatible and it is wireless. The package integrates biosensing and biofeedback with open source hardware, which is 3D printed, providing a suite of desktop applications, a software developer kit, and third-party integrations. Given that brain scans are more individual than fingerprints, and we've read about that before, EEGs may eventually prove useful as a method of biometric identification. Step right up, put on your headset, play your game. We're not recording your brain scan for future use. And historical data from those scans could be used to evaluate trends in an individual's electrical signaling, revealing their levels of stress, focus, or excitement, or more detailed information, such as recognizing your undiagnosed neuropsychiatric illnesses. that's all I think about. All right, so got about 10 minutes left, and we got one more page to go. The next section is titled Nanobots, Neural Dust, and Smart Dust, Biohybrid DNA Bots, and Other Creepy Crawlies. Often depicted as mini metallic spaceships in science fiction, most of today's nanobots are actually created from algae, bacteria, DNA, and other organisms already occurring in nature. Scientists and engineers discovered long ago that piggybacking on nature by controlling a biological organism is easier than building one from scratch with the same dexterity. Then we linked to videos on the cyborg roach, the cyborg beetle, and the dragonfly eye cyborg dragonfly. These types of nanobots are currently being used, and that would be not the cyborg roaches, beetles, and dragonflies, but the algae, bacteria, and DNA nanobots are currently being used in humans to target cancerous tumors and can be remotely controlled with magnetic pulses or ultrasound after being injected into the bloodstream near the targeted area, usually in oxygen-depleted zones, to carry some sort of drug payload. Key examples of these technologies would be magneto-aerotactic bacterial nanobots. These are new nanorobotic agents capable of navigating through the bloodstream. And remember, this is one of Kurzweil's favorite things to always talk about, with nanobots in your blood, to administer a drug with precision by specifically targeting the active cancerous cells of tumors. These legions of nanorobotic agents were actually composed of more than 100 million flagellated bacteria. Remember when we talked about those legions of nanobots? Well, here they are. And they are therefore self-propelled and loaded with drugs that are moved by taking the most direct path between the drug's injection point and the area of the body to cure. Number two would be algal-based nanobots. This is another remote-controlled biodegradable cancer-killing nanobot. This time it's made from spirulina algae with fluorescent and magnetic properties for tracking and to control it to remote areas of the body. Number three would be DNA-based nanobots. We've read about these before as well. Made of DNA, this creation is capable of performing nanomechanical tasks such as finding, carrying, and sorting molecular cargo like chemicals by using their nucleotide arms, hands, legs, and feet to perform tasks and walk around. They are smart enough to work alongside other bots in the same area without interfering with their tasks. And it could be used to deliver medicines throughout the body, transporting gene editing tools like CRISPR, or for other programmable therapeutics. Bio-based solutions represent a bulk of the nanotech in this category, and scientists believe that these types of bots could eventually be programmed with as much detail as full-sized mechanized robots. However, raise an eyebrow, researchers are also exploring nanobots made with electronics, such as neural dust. which is perhaps best described as a Fitbit for the nervous system. Created from CMOS circuits and sensors, NeuroDust uses ultrasound to power a 3-millimeter wide implant that can wirelessly track and transmit real-time data from nerves, organs, and muscles. Development of NeuroDust took rise with funding from DARPA, of course it did, in a 2013 UC Berkeley paper titled NeuroDust, an Ultrasonic Low-Powered Solution, conceptualizes a mature version of this technology, which could then be used to create an implantable brain-machine interface with ultrasonic sensors that can stimulate specific brain areas. Our bodies are quite permeable by ultrasound, and DARPA envisions that ultrasonically powered brain implants with biosensors may one day be used to monitor your health and regulate your bodily functions, ranging from your bladder control to the movement of prosthetic limbs. No, you can pee yet. And eventually enabling the self-healing of the body and the mind through so-called electroceuticals, which was a lot of that ElectRx program. Before NeuroDust, DARPA also financed research through Berkeley in 1998 to create the all-ever-present SmartDust. Technically known as micro-electromechanical sensors, or MEMS for short, which is essentially an IoT device that can be placed anywhere in the environment to wirelessly monitor changes such as light, vibrations, temperature, humidity, magnetism, or chemical signatures, acting as nerve endings in an ad hoc distributed network that provides full spectrum intelligence. All right, and last but not least, where is this all heading? Well, this is all heading to 5G, enabling the massive Internet of Things and smart cities, where you will be able to connect your wireless virtual reality from your smart contact lenses with your smart cells outside of your bedroom window. Rolling out over the next few years, 5G is expected to transform the world with its ever-present wireless connectivity that will enable a smart grid of IoT devices comprised of nearly everything on Earth, which could eventually facilitate an intelligence that runs alongside everyday life, monitoring and reacting from a smart city's central autonomous control center. Google, Facebook, Qualcomm, Verizon, AT&T, Nokia, and Samsung are some of the companies contributing toward the 5G network, not to mention interest from governments around the globe. China, Japan, and South Korea are currently leading in the deployment of 5G, while the U.S. and Europe are lagging a bit behind with projections for worldwide networks by the early to mid-2020s. Planned for meeting global sustainability goals, ding ding, 5G-connected cities pave the way for technologies such as autonomous delivery drones, self-driving shuttles, always-on IoT sensors, and biometric identification. Transportation could be intelligently directed in real time according to traffic levels and environmental conditions. Predictive surveillance cameras could report suspicious activity before crimes actually occur, while every morsel of data could be collected, analyzed, and used for the betterment of all. Welcome to your future utopia. Cisco, who has been in this game for a very long time, is a prime example of organizations focusing on technologies in this realm. I used to do Cisco engineering, so I kind of laugh because if I were still doing engineering, I would probably be engineering smart cities. The company has been speaking about the Internet of Everything for more than a decade, even back when I was an engineer. We used to laugh at them when they said that. And it was recognized as the number one smart city supplier in a 2017 report by Navigant Research. Since 2015, the company's IoT platform called Cisco Kinetic has been adopted by cities including Copenhagen, Paris, Kansas City, Las Vegas, Schenectady, Adelaide, Australia, Budapest, Hungary, Drupkov, Croatia, Trexin, Slovakia, as well as Bangalore and Jaipur in India. Cisco Connect is one of several unified IoT platforms being purpose-built to extract, compute, and move data to the right place at the right time in a given ecosystem. And by actively extrapolating and applying rules to information, these platforms can provide horizontal data aggregation and act as a multi-cloud, multi-party, multi-location IoT data fabric. That's the cage. It's going to be made out of carbon nanoparticles, which is useful for furthering smart city initiatives, driving better business outcomes, and watching everything you do every minute of your lives. While many localities are investing in big data platforms, several projects are underway to construct new smart cities from backing from major technology partners, including Alphabet, Cisco, NVIDIA, Alibaba, Beidou, and Billy Gates. And then we outline five key cities. One is Alibaba's City Brain in Hangzhou, China. We read about this one. Created in collaboration with more than a dozen companies, including Foxconn and HTC, Alibaba's Brain 1.0 uses deep learning and AI to track commutes, purchases, social media, and other interactions for optimizing city functions, such as managing Hangzhou's traffic lights to keep transportation moving and accidents down, or to identify potentially criminal behavior. Then we have NEOM in Saudi Arabia. AI, created by AI for AI, expected to span 10,000 square miles along the coast of the Red Sea toward Jordan and Egypt. Investors around the globe have committed more than $500 billion to build Saudi Arabia's city of the future. NEOM will have its own governmental framework and be powered by technologies such as renewable energy, high-speed wireless connectivity, and artificial intelligence. Project is viewed as a new economic development engine that will fuel biotech, manufacturing, and media development. Sidewalk Labs Internet City in Toronto, Canada, is being developed by Google's sister company, Sidewalk Labs, and they won a competition to test and install their smart city technology as a redevelopment project for an 800-acre parcel known as Quayside on Toronto's Lake Ontario waterfront. The area will be built with emerging technologies like self-driving taxis and buses, smart streetlights, modular buildings, and environmentally managed outdoor spaces to mitigate the weather and maximize being outdoors. Garbage trucks will also be replaced by autonomous vehicles moving garbage through underground tunnels. Singapore, they are going to launch their Smart Nation platform, and I'm going to predict that that is coming to a United States near us someday. Being an island nation that is essentially a large city, Singapore has taken the unique opportunity to become the first smart nation, connecting all of their traffic management, their elder care, elder monitoring, air quality control, and citizen services. The country is calling it a national operating system for 100 million objects, and the City Brain can provide real-time data monitoring and a central graphical dashboard. All right, guys, have an awesome Wednesday. Take care.
My name